Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Senate Finance. It is January 30th. Time is about 5 after 9. We're going to have a presentation today of the AGDC project update. And if you gentlemen will come forward, we can get started on it. Present at the table are Senator Bishop, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Olson. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Senator McKinnon, myself, Senator Kelly. Senator Hoffman is in his district, or actually in Kotzebue, I believe, at a inaugural. And we can get started as soon as you're ready. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Frank Richards. I'm Vice President for Engineering and Program Management for the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, otherwise known as AGDC. And I'm accompanied here today by Joe Dubler to my left and Fritz Krusen, and I'll allow them to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Joe Dubler. I'm the Vice President of Commercial Operations for AGDC.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I am Fritz Krusen, Vice President of Alaska LNG for AGDC.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, we're here today to provide an update on what activities and work products that the AGDC has undertaken over the last year, especially with the passage of Senate Bill 138 and the involvement of AGDC in the Alaska LNG project, and give you kind of an insight into what we have built, what we're calling the assets that AGDC now retains for the state of Alaska, because AGDC is really the state's pipeline company. And so the work activities and the work products that we're developing are essentially assets that are owned by the state. And then we wanted to really identify what our corporate focus will be over the next year, and then provide an update on what we've done with the Alaska Standalone, or ASAP, project, with the major milestones and work products that we have just completed as of December of 2014, and then talk to you a little bit about our project focus and funding status going into the next year. So a quick introduction into what AGDC is. It was a legislatively created public corporation that has a legal existence separate and independent from the state. And that was under AS 3125010, which provides AGDC then the ability to represent the state in developing those pipeline projects and transportation projects to provide energy for Alaskans. And at the initiation and creation of AGDC was really focused on trying to provide energy to Alaskans. And that's with the passage of HB 4, gives the directions for focusing on an in-state natural gas pipeline to be able to provide an energy transportation mechanism to meet the needs of Fairbanks and South Central Alaska. Potential declining reserves in the Cook Inlet area, the focus was to be able to provide then the resources of the North Slope to, again, the interior and South Central Alaska and folks along that pipeline corridor. Then we've been, our focus has been expanded then with the passage of 138 and our representation for the state in the Alaskan LNG project. So our goals are, again, to provide energy, but also to provide the maximization of the natural resources and the commercialization of the huge amounts of natural gas on the North Slope to help the state in regards to providing for an income stream into the future. So we hold the currently AGDC holds the equity position for the liquefaction plant in the Alaskan LNG project. That's a 25% representation of the plant in that one segment of the AKLNG project. And then finally, again, our focus is to provide a pipeline capable of delivering those mechanisms to South Central and to communities along the state at the lowest possible cost. So as I've said, part of the objectives given to us by the legislature were to provide for a long-term affordable energy supply for Alaskans, because we see and have seen in previous years with the high cost of home heating fuel and diesel that Alaskans are paying dearly, not only in Fairbanks and Anchorage, but also in the rural communities. And so the objectives of AGDC is to provide some energy relief to those communities as best we can through the mechanisms that we can build out once we have access to that natural gas. And then hopefully an outcome of this will be further facilitation for oil and gas development, so that as you have a conduit, you can then look to provide new resources, new access to those resources to be able to bring that to market. And then overall, provide the maximum benefit to Alaskans through the access to those, and hopefully the monetary remuneration from that, the sale of those assets. So quickly, just wanted to give an overview of the two distinct projects that we have now under our responsibility. Again, the ASAP project with the passage of HB 4 was to provide for energy for Alaskans. And so with that, then, the design concept was changed early in 2013 to have a pipeline that would deliver utility-grade gas. And what I mean by this is gas that can essentially go from the pipeline into existing distribution systems or new distribution systems right to the homeowner for burning at their stovetop or in their home furnaces, as well as being able to utilize that gas in power production with the existing turbine sets that are in existence. So with that, it was a 727-mile, 36-inch diameter pipeline, and it was capped at 500 million standard cubic feet a day. And that was placed, that limitation was originally placed on us by the AGIA statute and by the agreement signed with TransCanada. But that termination agreement that was signed in July of 2014 now has relieved us of that cap. However, the work that we had underway through 2014 was advanced far enough that it wasn't going to be beneficial to change the design cap and not finish the work so that we could get to a Class 3 estimate and identify the economics on that particular line. And that's what we've completed now in December of 2014, which is a Class 3 estimate that we've shown to be the cost now at approximately $10 billion. And that's, again, for a gas treatment plant on the North Slope, with a 727-mile pipeline and a lateral leading into Fairbanks to feed into what will hopefully be a distribution system built out by others. So what you see is approximately a 3.5-year construction window. And with the passage of 138, though, we have essentially deferred our schedule, delayed the schedule, because the policy call was that Alaska LNG was the primary project for the state of Alaska. So it didn't make sense to advance the ASAP line on the original schedule, because quite frankly we'd have to go out to an open season and sought to have commercial interests such as the producers ship on that line, while at the same time they're designing and planning for their own line. So we didn't think it would be successful. So with that, we have deferred work activities and deferred our schedule now until 2024. For completion of the ASAP project. For the Alaskan LNG project, again, the focus is on commercialization of Alaska North Slope resources. That project is now in what is known as pre-FEED, pre-front-end engineering and design effort, as opposed to ASAP, which has just completed the FEED, front-end engineering and design, and able to come up with a Class 3 estimate. The differences between these are, again, the AKLNG project is for export of an LNG project to the world market. That means that the gas composition on that line is going to be slightly different, because they're going to be conditioning that gas to an LNG quality spec. What that means is it will be removing CO2 down to approximately 50 parts per million, as opposed to ASAP, where we meet industry or utility-grade standards at approximately 3% CO2. And then the design capacity of the projects are slightly different.
Senator Dunleavy?
Through the chair, just a quick question. The difference in the gas, is there also a difference in the sale price as a result of the differences in gas? Or is it insignificant? How would you address that?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, it would depend on the customer. Currently, NSTAR doesn't sell on a BTU basis. BTU is a British thermal unit. It's a measure of the heating quality of the gas. NSTAR sells on a volumetric basis, which a large customer, for instance, a utility would probably pay on a BTU basis. So they would pay a differential for a higher BTU content gas, but local consumers would not.
So the export gas could be at a higher price.
Yes.
Thank you.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the record, that was Mr. Joe Dubler responding from to Senator Dunleavy's question. If I could, Mr. Chairman, to Mr. Richardson, I'm sorry, Mr. Richards, I didn't hear right before Senator Dunleavy was raising his hand for a question how you were quantifying the difference between the two projects and the quality of gas. So if you could restate that for me.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon. Absolutely. The two projects, again, the outcome from the gas treatment on the North Slope. Each project has a gas treatment facility on the North Slope with a pipeline leading down to South Central Alaska. ASAP terminates in the NSTAR Beluga pipeline system, and the Alaska LNG pipeline terminates at Nikiski with the new LNG plant. The gas composition is different because of, again, the customers that we will be delivering to. For the ASAP project, it's the existing utilities. It's the homeowners that currently have natural gas as a heating source, and hopefully to Fairbanks and the North Star Borough and more communities that would have new distribution systems built if economic. So the composition then is utility-grade gas for the ASAP project and LNG-quality gas for the Alaskan LNG project. Now, one of the major differences, again, is the volume throughputs for these two projects. Alaskan LNG starts out at 3.3 billion standard cubic feet a day at the gas treatment plant on the North Slope, whereas the ASAP project is 500 million, so approximately six times greater. And then the other component that the Alaska LNG project has is that large LNG facility in Nikiski. And that's where Mr. Cruzan came on board with us after a very stellar career with ConocoPhillips as their global LNG lead. So I'll ask Mr. Cruzan if you have anything else to add on that.
Yes. Through the chair, Senator. For the record, Fritz Krusen, Vice President, Alaska LNG, AGDC. So, again, with LNG, it's a little different. And so, picking up on Frank's comment that we remove the CO2 to carbon dioxide to a, shall we say, a higher criteria, that's probably the biggest difference in that the utility-grade gas, you can burn that in your home heating system with 3% carbon dioxide. If you tried to pass that 3% carbon dioxide through an LNG plant, it would turn into dry ice and freeze up the plant, and then you'd have to shut down. So we have to remove it down to 50 parts per million, so much, much less than for the industrial application. And that, in turn, is what makes the gas coming down the pipeline a little richer and perhaps a bit better suited then for marketing to the Far East LNG markets that expect a richer grade of gas.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a brief comment, and correct me if I'm wrong, but also that would add, it's a more valuable product, the LNG export product, too, correct?
Correct, yes. It's more valuable. People in the Far East, Japan, South Korea don't have natural gas, and so they pay for it based upon some sort of parity with oil.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as I said, the schedule differences, the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project has aligned our next major milestone with the pre-feed decision for Alaskan LNG, which will be in the first quarter of 2016. So that meant that we, with the delay of that, with the open season and the filing with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, that our overall schedule would now shift more in line with Alaska LNG's 2024-2025 timeline for completion and first gas.
Take it quick at ease. back on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I was stating, the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project schedule now is that we've changed our schedule to align our milestone, our next major milestone date, essentially with that of the Alaska LNG pre-FEED FEED decision in the first quarter of 2016. Because up to that point, we won't know if that project is advancing. If that project is advancing into FEED, then the concept of Alaska working on two projects is mute, and we would be focusing on the Alaska LNG project. If the Alaska LNG project decides not to go into FEED, then the backup plan is the ASAP project.
Okay. Continue. Oh, Senator Dunleavy, did you have a question? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we wanted to, again, identify to you what we have accumulated as assets over the work activities that we've been directed to essentially complete by the legislature since our inception. And with the original passage of the bill, the legislature directed the Department of Natural Resources to grant the Alaska Gasoline Development Corporation a state right-of-way. Now, this is a right-of-way that is unconditional and is transferable. So it's an asset that the corporation holds and is available then for us to use on the projects. We had originally completed a final environmental impact statement on the original design concept, which was a smaller diameter, higher pressure pipeline, which was contained more liquids, natural gas liquids. But with the focus on trying to get gas to Alaskans at the lowest possible cost, we changed the design premise to a lower pressure utility grade gas in a larger diameter project. So that means that we have had to reinitiate a supplemental environmental impact process statement through the National Environmental Policy Act, which is necessary for us to advance a project because of the impacts that we will have on wetlands. So the key driver for a project of this size and length is the impact on wetlands, and so that means we trigger a federal process under the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. So what we have most recently developed this summer is, again, revised our plan of development and completed our environmental evaluation document, which is essentially a draft of the supplemental environmental document that the Army Corps will then use to write the supplemental environmental impact. That's a key asset for the state because it identifies all of the mechanisms, both design, construction, and environmental impacts of this associated project. And we've done public scoping now in 16 communities around the state. Quite frankly, we received a very good outcome because the public came in and supported us, and they were vocal in that support. So that showed that to us that from the public's perspective, we thought that we had good support for this line going forward because, again, it was focused on energy for Alaskans.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Frank, as we move forward on the supplemental environmental impact statement, is the volume that we have applied for different as we've changed the diameter of the pipe, or is it the same volume right now under the EIS? And if that volume changes, if Alaska LNG isn't successful, would we have to modify the EIS?
Through the Chair, Senator McKinnon, the SEIS was initiated with a design throughput of 500 million standard cubic feet a day, because that was the law of the land at the time. Now, at this point, we don't know what volumes the commercial interest may have for the ASAP project, and we really won't know that until we're able to go out and have meaningful discussions with the commercial interests where they can identify to us what that would be. So we are continuing with the SEIS with that 500 million. Again, that decision in first quarter 2016 will be very, very key, because at that point, if AKLNG is not to proceed, then we would look to the market to see what volumes they would like from a pipeline. At that point, we would have to look to see how we would accomplish that. You can do it through additional compression by essentially placing compressor stations intermediate along the pipeline to be able to increase your volumes. But again, that would result then, if the volumes were large enough, for a redesign of the gas treatment plant on the North Slope to accommodate those larger volumes as well. And then ultimately, you need to know what your end market will be and how we would, where the terminus of the pipeline would be at that point. So again, it's a yet to find or unknown.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Really, I just want to know whether you have to go in and modify if the volume changes. Will you you indicated that if there's a new treatment plant developed, that I assume that will trigger some additional fact-finding or modifications to current requests. Can you give the committee any idea of what, is that an expected time hurdle that's inside of your timeline, or would that be unexpected, and if so, what might the state be looking at for a time frame on that?
Through the Chair, Senator McKinnon, again, Frank Richards, AGDC. And I'm not trying to be evasive. It really depends on the volume throughput. So, for instance, if we took an example, if it was going to be 800 million standard cubic feet a day, we would have to redesign our plant to be able to optimize the conditioning of the gas, and we'd probably change the train set from 250 to 400. Then to be able to accommodate that 800 million, we would add compressor stations, probably 280 compressor stations along the line. So that depending on the amount of impact to the wetlands, that would trigger whether or not you could do it through an environmental assessment or would require a supplemental environmental impact statement again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, the second part of your question was, have we accommodated that in our schedule for ASAP? And the answer is yes. So by delaying to 1Q pre-feed decision with AKLNG, we've built into our forward schedule then discussion with commercial interest, potential redesign, and environmental process. So, Mr. Chairman, I would just wanted to articulate that these corporate assets are assets owned by the state of Alaska. So this is what we can use for either project and going forward. And what we are using in our work efforts with the Alaska LNG project and in our collaboration between those two, so that we can help advance that project as well. So boreholes are essentially boreholes that we've now drilled in the area south of Livengood, because we got the message loud and clear from the legislature and the former administration to not duplicate efforts. And so we have worked with the Alaska LNG parties, because they held a tremendous amount of information on geotechnical and geologic north of Livengood. And so now, through a data exchange, we have obtained for AGDC the information north of Livengood and shared with the Alaska LNG the geologic and geotechnical information south of Livengood. So that has helped both projects. One of the main issues that we'll see on any project is, again, identification of material sources and opening access and availability of that material source to provide for general backfill, for the work pad, for padding and bedding for the pipeline. And so we have a major effort underway that will benefit either project, but also the state of Alaska through its needs with the Department of Transportation for future highway and road construction. We've done air quality monitoring on the North Slope, and we have now put in then for an air quality permit for the site of the gas conditioning facility. This site is essentially co-located at the same location with the gas treatment plant for the Alaskan LNG project. So that air quality data has value to both projects and will allow the permitting process for either project to proceed expeditiously. The stream-based design pipe is essentially a subset of the pipeline that crosses discontinuous permafrost. And the challenge with this is, with a chilled pipeline, you'll have the impacts of frost heave and thaw sediment. So that action, those geologic actions, will have induced strain into the pipe, meaning it'll stretch the pipe like a rubber band. And under the Pipeline Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, you must assure the federal regulators that you have pipe strong enough to handle those strains. So we went out and have developed a pipeline spec for that. We acquired 12 joints from three different mills around the world that can produce this high-quality pipe. And we now have that being tested, being welded together to verify our welding procedures, and being essentially pulled apart to verify that our strain design models are accurate, to be able to prove to the federal regulator that we have the pipe capable of handling the conditions that we will see in discontinuous permafrost areas. We've completed our line pipe specifications.
Frank, what's the word you used before permafrost? I missed it both times.
Discontinuous.
Oh, okay.
So more slopy, no, than continuous permafrost. Discontinuous is that area, essentially interior Alaska, where you go from patches of permafrost to thawed ground and back and forth. And right. It's really that area in between where you'll see the movements that like we see on frost heaves on the road.
Senator Bishop.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd just like to make a point for the listening public and those that folks that might not be so inclined to let us build a pipeline for all the whatever their obvious reasons are. But I'd just like for the record to reflect that TAPS was built, you know, almost 40 years ago. You know, that was all done by hand. We call it poor boy in the industry. And the engineering that was done over 40-some years ago, the true test of that metal was a 7.6 earthquake at the Denali Fault when it laid 400 feet of that pipe out of the rack on the ground without a structural failure and was picked back up and put in the rack. So kudos to the people that engineered TAPS.
And those welders, I used to just be amazed watching the pipe get laid out. I used to work up during the construction. I worked up there. It was phenomenal how fast they could lay pipe. And those welds held. They're amazing. Yeah. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, to that point, both projects cross the Denali Fault in the area south of Denali National Park. And our paleoseismologist, who also worked on TAPS and predicted that there would be a rupture in a large magnitude quake with up to 40 feet of displacement horizontally, predicts a similar type of event for the during the lifetime of this project. So we are using that same design that TAPS used to bring the pipe above ground, put it on essentially what they call sleepers or I-beams embedded, and allow the pipe to move during that ground motion. So we are using, again, the work of our forefathers and that has proved to be successful. So these assets are, I just wanted to share just a brief glimpse of them. We have a tremendous amount more with the work on ASAP, with the alignment sheets and the march charts that we have done. We have an extremely robust geographical information system, and then we have now completed our Class 3 estimate, which I'll get into shortly.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one last comment before we move off assets. And, you know, there's a difference of opinions and studies here and studies there. But I want to make a comment now, and I would like your opinion. I classify these as not money going down a rat hole that's just being thrown away. Because I firmly believe these are saleable assets to any project, and I would like to know, and you probably can't answer it today, but to come back to this committee, permission of the chairman, with the value of those assets.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, again, Frank Richards with AGDC, they are saleable assets that are owned by the state of Alaska, and we hold them quite dearly because it was the charge provided to us by you, the legislature, and that in our collaboration and cooperation that we'll get to in later slides, you'll hear how we are working that with our partners with Alaska LNG. But again, it is it's of keen interest as well as a fiduciary responsibility that you've granted to us, and then we hold that very, very strongly. Quickly, Mr. Chairman, on pipeline ownership, as I said, we have the state right-of-way granted to us. The outcome of the Supplemental Environmental Impact Statement and the record decision from the Army Corps will allow then the Bureau of Land Management, through its own record of decision, to grant the federal right-of-way. And so that will provide then the ASAP line approximately 85% of the right-of-way available to build a project. When we reach the point of deciding whether to proceed or not will really then make it'll be a triggering time for negotiations with the the landowners, as you see in the bottom of this slide, the private parcel owners, the municipalities and boroughs, and the native corporations. We've not entered into those negotiations at this time because it's too premature. But I wanted to give you just an indication that 85% of the line, at least for the ASAP project, will be held by AGDC.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Joe Dubler, Vice President of Commercial Operations, AGDC. Frank just went through the ASAP project, and the importance of, distinction between the ASAP project and the Alaska LNG project is that the state owns 100% of ASAP through its pipeline company, AGDC. The AKLNG, Alaska LNG, which we commonly call the AKLNG project, is a combination of owners based on the resource ownership up on the North Slope. And you see on the graph, ConocoPhillips, British Petroleum, and ExxonMobil are those three owners. And the gold circle there is the seal of the state of Alaska, indicating the state's an owner as well. The state owns gas through its royalty share, and in addition, to the extent that the state makes the determination to go with taxes gas, they would own approximately 25% of the resource on the North Slope. That 25% is, in the project's current configuration, is held by TransCanada in the North Slope facilities and pipeline, and AGDC in the LNG facility. So the state is represented by two corporations in its interest in the project.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, Fritz is going to go through the recent activity on AKLNG.
So, Mr. Chairman, for the record, Fritz Krusen, AGDC. And I'm going to give sort of a summary of some of the technical highlights of AKLNG, both from the project perspective and from the AGDC perspective. So our board, our AGDC board, recently approved our calendar year 2015 budget of $39.8 million. That budget, in turn, is based on the project team's what's called work plan and budget, WPNB. So the various sub-projects, the gas treatment plant, the pipeline, the marine terminal, the LNG plant, the permitting folks all got together, figured out what deliverables they're going to deliver, when they're going to do it, what work they're going to do, who's going to do what, came up with their budget. We've taken that budget, worked it, and that's become our budget. So we're off and running, but we're trying to spend the money wisely. As Frank mentioned, we're working very hard to coordinate reuse of historical data so that we only do things one time, don't sort of reinvent the wheel, and very much trying to synchronize going forward. So again, we only disturb the landowners or the agencies or the public one time. We get the information for both projects, and we try to be effective that way. Although AKLNG is far away from sanction, FID as we call it, in 2019, we do have people out in the field. So for what was the summer 2014 field season, actually ended in November, we had over 250 people in the field. These were people looking at stream crossings along the pipeline corridor or drilling geotech boreholes so that we could get our foundations right in the vicinity of the LNG plant, or taking marine surveys of the Cook Inlet so we can figure out how we're going to cross that. Anyway, of those 250 people, 80% were Alaskans, and the AKLNG project and we, AGDC, continue to champion Alaska hire and utilization of Alaskan capabilities. There is a website, or one of the provisions of the AKLNG website is a place for folks who are interested in participating to sign up. So as one can imagine, this is a huge, huge engineering project, and Frank mentioned that we are in pre-FEED, again, FEED, front end engineering design. You do your engineering design at the front so that what you build, you build correctly. Before pre-FEED is a step called concept selection, and that's sort of done in-house. And that's where we came up with the idea of, okay, a gas treatment plant on the North Slope with three trains, a big pipeline, LNG plant with three trains. But now we've moved into pre-FEED. And when you do that, you start doing real engineering to sort of detail out just what it is you're going to build and to optimize what it is you're going to be building. So to do that, you hire engineering contractors, and we've hired some real world-scale contractors through the competitive bidding process. So the gas treatment plant is being engineered by a company called URS with a subcontractor called CBI, and then Alaska's AES is providing Alaskan input. That work's being done out of Denver. The pipeline is being engineered by Worley Parsons, primarily in Calgary. The LNG plant, CBI, won that bid. They're being assisted by a Japanese company called Chiyoda, who have built a fair share of the world-scale LNG plants around the planet. And once again, AES is providing Alaska knowledge. The marine facilities, that's being engineered by CHRM Hill. Once again, CHRM Hill Anchorage is providing Alaska knowledge. So yes, it's a big engineering project, but it's also a big permitting project. So the Department of Energy authorized our LNG exports to the tune of 20 MTPA, or 20 millions of tons per year, to free trade agreements. That includes South Korea in the Pacific Rim. Yet to come are the non-FTA approvals, but that's being worked. The lead permitting agency is FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Oh, I'm sorry, question?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Through the chair, the Department of Energy authorized LNG exports to free trade agreement countries. Are our prospective customers all within that free trade agreement?
No.
Japan, Korea, Taiwan, whomever else?
No, to my knowledge, South Korea is the only one, and so the deliberation continues for the non-FTA approvals.
How do you think that's going to pan out, or it's too hard to project?
So through the chair, Senator, I really don't know, but you know, I think in general, we've heard rumblings that FERC is supportive of our efforts.
Go ahead.
All right. So, again, getting back to FERC, at some point we will file an environmental impact statement through them. This is the pre-filing phase, so a bit like the pre-engineering phase. It's the pre-filing. We've agreed a strategy with them. It's kind of a two-step dance. There's a number of what are called resource reports that describe the project. Resource 1 actually is the project description. Resource Report 10 describes alternatives. Report 5 describes the socioeconomic impacts of the product. And then there's reports that deal with the air quality impacts, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, we're taking the concept select information and the information that we've generated in early pre-feed, and any day now we're going to be filing the first 12 resource reports with FERC. I think the target is mid-February. So this is a deliberate strategy to enable then the agencies to put their people on our project instead of other people's projects and begin to ask questions about what we're trying to do and get it out in the public domain and get the public's input, and we get the agency input and we get the public input in time to help direct our summer 2015 and winter 2015 field programs. Then when we're done with all that, we bring all of that field information in, the public comment information in, the pre-feed engineering information in, and we resubmit the second draft of the resource reports about this time next year. It's a huge public scoping process. Thus far, there have been over 60 meetings along the right of way and with other interest groups. Thus far, AKLNG have been in the lead in hosting these meetings, but pretty soon FERC will take over hosting. So I think that concludes my presentation, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, on this slide, we really wanted to articulate that AGDC has a role and responsibility within both projects. And so with that, then, we have a coordination responsibility as well as a collaboration to be able to advance the state's interests for both projects. So There has been a tremendous amount of work, baseline engineering and data and field effort that was done by previous iterations of large-scale projects. Also those from the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. That information is owned by the producer companies and is a wealth of information. That's why we, as I said earlier, focused our initial efforts south of Livengood in the hopes of being able to gain access to that tremendous historic data north of Livengood. And I'm pleased to say that we did work out and have worked out a cooperation agreement that is now in effect, and we have exchanged historic data between the two projects. That alone has saved tens of millions of dollars for both projects in not having to go out and duplicate effort. That's been geotechnical information, that's been looking at civil works, that's been looking at hydrology works. So the whole premise of this was to avoid the duplication, but also to help in terms of that very aggressive schedule that Alaska LNG has in regards to getting to that 1Q feed decision, as well as the feeding of information into the resource reports. Because the JVA was signed in July, because of the iterations of finding contractors and getting them under contract, that slowed their process down a little bit. So the work efforts that AGDC has and is able to then work with AKLNG to help them advance their schedule is beneficial to the Alaska LNG project. And again, it's assets that are held by the state, and we're working cooperatively with them, but we're not giving away the farm, so to speak.
Frank, just a heads up, we've got about 10 more minutes.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I do want to get on to the next slide, which is the Class 3 estimate for the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project. This was a culmination of essentially 3 years' worth of work to advance us to approximately a 30% design level estimate. And what Class 3 means is the level of estimate as defined by the American Association of Cost Estimators, which is more around what you do in major facilities work to define. When you have a definition with engineering, you can then come up with a level of cost.
American Association of Cost Estimators, man, I bet you that's a great Christmas party, huh?
I'm sure it is, Mr. Chairman. I can't say I've ever been, but exciting folks. In 2012, we were at what is known as the Class 4 level estimate, approximately 7.7. When we adjust that for inflation, we're approximately 8 million. And then the work that we've just completed with the detailed design of the gas treatment facility and the pipeline, we now find ourselves at approximately $10 billion. That represents or includes approximately $900 million worth of contingency. We used an analysis to come up with a confidence level, and so we feel that we're at a P75 confidence level on this estimate because we have gone out and received from major contractors bid level work packages. We used had work from Peter Kiewit, from Boyan Associated, from Bryce, from AIC, Bryce Gregory, other contractors that know Arctic conditions and gave us their bids on this effort. And then we also went out and received vendor quotes from process manufacturers as well as the fabrication yards. So we feel that we have a very good estimate and that this is a true representation of the cost of developing and producing this project at this time. And then you can see that it represents approximately two-thirds, one-third cost of the pipeline as opposed to the gas conditioning facility on the North Slope. And then I'll quickly roll into the tariffs so you can see what the outcomes would be to the consumers in Alaska.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Joe Dubler, AGDC. The tariff rate based on the new cost estimates for 2014, you see in the column above, the tariff rate for Fairbanks is estimated to be $5.50 to $6.75. And the way we show it, the reason we show it in a range is we make a lot of estimates in a tariff calculation. There's hundreds of estimates, and we want to just indicate that it's not $6.23. It's not that precise. There is some degree of uncertainty in a projection. So we want to reflect that in a tariff range instead of a single number. The Anchorage tariff rate of $8 to $9.75 would end up with a burner tip cost, and burner tip would be what you and I pay for NSTAR for our gas, $11.50 to $14.50, where we're currently just under $10, I believe. The advantage that this project gives is there's dozens, if not de-
decades and decades worth of gas on the North Slope, and there's no risk of running out of gas with a 500 million cubic foot usage per day in our lifetimes, at least. The tariff model, some of the major assumptions are 70 to 30 debt to equity, a 12% return on equity, a 5.7% construction and financing cost, and we depreciate the project over 25 years. Those are all fairly conservative assumptions. The 12% return, the returns we've seen are somewhere between 11 and 14, with recently being much on the lower side of that. The financing cost is fairly high, and a 25-year depreciation is fairly conservative as well.
Senator Bishop, and then Senator McKinnon.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, would it be safe to say, because I'm not a, you're the commercial guy, and I'm just the guy that builds the pipeline, but would it be safe to say that it's imperative that the state keep their AAA bond rating as we go forward and make sure that we're sending the right signals to the financial markets, that we're doing the right thing with our budgeting, et cetera? Because if we don't, that could that delta move on the 5.7 construction cost financing?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, a rating analysis on a project like this could take into account the state's rating, and the state's rating is always important to the state as a whole. The other corporations of the state issue debt. A project like this would probably be rated on the end customers, which in the case of a 500 million cubic foot in-state line would be NSTAR. It would be whatever entity takes over and sells gas in Fairbanks. Excuse me. It would be the utilities, most of which aren't rated. So the state's rating could play a very important role in the financing of this project.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at the 70 to 30 debt ratio on a line that we would 100% own, that means we're going out to the market. And so would the cash portion of the component be carried inside of the rate tariff and transferred as a rate of return back to Alaskans, as far as if you're assuming a 30% cash investment? Would it still be carried in the tariff, or would it be outside of the tariff so that Alaska saw the benefit of the reduction in transportation charges?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, you could structure it either way. To be conservative, what we've done here is we've assumed that the state's $400 million contribution, plus or minus, does achieve, a 12% return on equity. The 30% equity, though, we're making the assumption that the state is not going to be building and owning this project. We've always said that the state can own assets. The state owns lots of things, but as far as owning and operating and building a gas pipeline, that's not what the state does. We've already gone out and done a request for proposals, a competitive process where we've selected a pipeline company to come in and build and own and operate. And the negotiation with them is how we would determine the debt to equity ratio and the return on equity that they're reimbursed for through the tariff.
Mr. Chairman, I know that we need to hurry to get to the floor. What happens if the demand for in-state gas settles at the 250 MCF that I've seen some projections or forecasts for in-state use? Would we be trying to sell the other portion, at least based on your 500 MMCF calculations?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, the assumptions that we've made on this is 500, and to the extent that in-state users didn't fully utilize that 500, we would look to sell others to others, and that would be through the open season process.
Just a couple minutes, if you could wrap it up.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Slide 14 really just is a history of the 500 million limitation for the ASAP. What I really want to talk to you about is, again, the slide 15, which talks about the revised spend plan for the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project. And on the chart, you'll see the orange or the upper line, which represents the original spend plan that the legislature authorized Alaska Gasoline Development Corporation to pursue through a recourse tariff filing, open season, and then hopefully to a project sanction. So that was the plan that we had originally presented to the legislature and was sanctioned. With the, again, the passage of Senate Bill 138 and the need to make a defer or decision until 1Q 2016, we've revised the spend plan over the next 15 to 16 months for the ASAP project and reduced the spend by approximately $90 million. That represents a 60% reduction in spend. that we will complete our NEPA process, National Environmental Policy Act, EIS process. We'll continue to do some of the field work in alignment with AKONG, and we'll do some of the material testing that we have underway that will be of benefit to the state. But this is, again, a reduction in spend over the next year, and it will keep the ASAP project viable, but it will allow us to continue to do durable and transferable work between the projects. And are we out of time, Mr. Chairman?
We are. Senator McKinnon, the last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to go back to the social impact. I'm trying to find the slide that you had a conversation on the design and capacity. It was on slide 10 under regulatory. It says resource reports providing baseline environmental and socioeconomic data. I just wanted to make sure that anyone watching knows that those are in process, correct? And municipalities as well as individuals could comment on those reports. Could we get that in the mic?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, yes, those works are in process. It will actually be an open public document with FERC once they initiate or they file those resource reports, and then there'll be a vigorous public scoping or meeting schedule set up so that individuals as well as municipalities will be able to review and comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing us.
We're adjourned.